Then Maharaj Nabi and his wife Merodevi went to Bhadrakashram in the Himalaya Mountains, where the king engaged himself very expertly in austerities and penances with great jubilation. In full samadhi, he worshipped the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narayan, who is Krishna, in his plenary expansion. By doing so, in course of time, Maharaj Nabi was elevated to the spiritual world known as Vaikuntha. Prabhupada Maharaj Navi saw this, understood it was popular with the general populace and the government servants. He chose to install him on the imperial throne. In addition, he wanted to entrust his son into the hands of the learned brahmanas. This means that Amarik was supposed to govern strictly according to Vedic principles under the guidance of learned brahmanas, who had advised him according to the standard Vedic scriptures that Manu, Smriti, and similar shastras. It is the duty of the king to rule the citizens according to Vedic principles. According to Vedic principles, society is divided into four categories: Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, and Sudra. Chaturvarna, Mahashastram, Guna, Karma, and Vibhagasaha. After dividing society in this way, it is the king's duty to see that everyone executes Vedic principles according to his caste. A Brahmana must perform the duties of a Brahmana without cheating the public. It is not that one attains the name of a Brahmana without the qualification. It is the king's duty to see that everyone engaged in an occupational duty according to Vedic principles. In addition, retirement at the end of life is compulsory. Maharaj Navi, although still a king, retired from family life and went with his wife to a place called Bhadrakashram in the Himalayas, where the deity Narayan is worshipped. The words prasanna nipunena tapasa indicates that the king accepted all kinds of austerity very expertly and jubilantly. He did not at all mind leaving his comfortable life at home, although he was the emperor. Despite undergoing severe austerities and penances, he felt very pleased at Bhadrakashram and did everything there expertly. In this way, being fully absorbed in Krishna consciousness, not always thinking of Krishna, Vasudeva, Maharaj Navi attained success at the end of his life and promoted the spiritual world by Pantaloka. This is the way of Vedic life. One must stop the process of repeated birth and death and return home back to Godhead. In the words, Tan Mahimanam Avapa, are significant in this regard. Sridhar Swami says that Mahima means liberation in this life. We should act in such a way in this life that after giving up this body, we will become liberated from the bondage of repeated birth and death. This is called Jiva Mukti. Srila Viraghavacharya states that in the Chandogya Upanishad there are 8 symptoms of a Jiva Mukti, a person who is already liberated. Even when living in this body, the first symptom of one is so liberated is he is free from all sinful activities. As long as one is under the clutch of the Maya and the material energy, one has to engage in sinful activity. Bhagavad Gita describes such people as Dushpritana, which indicates that they are always engaged in sinful activity. One who is liberated in this life does not commit any sinful activities. Sinful activities involve illicit sex, meat eating, intoxication, and gambling. Another symptom of a liberated person is Vijara, which indicates that he is not subjected to the miseries of old age. Another symptom is Vimitru. A liberated person prepares himself in such a way that he does not take on any more material bodies which are destined to die. In other words, he does not fall again at repeated birth and death. Another symptom is Vishoka, which indicates he is callous to material distress and happiness. Another is Vijigatsa, which indicates that he no longer desires material enjoyment. Another symptom is Abhipata, which means he has no desire other than to engage in devotional service of Krishna, your most pursuable Lord. A further symptom is Satyakama, which indicates that all desires are directed to the Supreme Truth. Krishna does not want anything else. He is Satyasankalpa, whatever he desires is fulfilled by the grace of Krishna. First of all, he does not desire anything for his material benefit, and second, if he desires anything at all, he simply desires to serve the Supreme Lord. That desire is fulfilled by the Lord's grace. That is called Satyasankalpa. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti points out that the word Mahima means returning to the spiritual world back home at Vaikuntha. Srila Sukadev says that the word Mahima means that the devotee attains the qualities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is called Sadharma or Saint Quality. Just as Krishna is never born, never dies, his devotees return never to Godhead, never die, and never take birth within the material world. Translation, King Navi understood that his son, Rishabhadeva, was very popular among the citizens, among government officers and ministers. Understanding the popularity of his son, Maharaj Navi enthroned him as the emperor of the world to give protection to the general populace in terms of the Vedic religious system. To do this, he entrusted him into the hands of learned brahmanas, who would guide him in administering the government. Then Maharaj Navi and his wife, Merodevi, went to Bhadrakashram in the Himalaya Mountains, where the king engaged himself very expertly in austerities and penances with great jubilation. In full samadhi, he worshipped the Supreme Personality of God in Narayan, who is Krishna, in his plenary expansion. By doing so, in course of time, Maharaj Navi was elevated to the spiritual world known as Vaikuntha. So in the previous chapter, the King Navi was described as the king who performed sacrifice to get a son like the Supreme Lord. Then Rishabhadeva was born as his son, and he was an incarnation of the Supreme Lord, avatar. So Navi, what did he do? Then he retired after responsibly training out Rishabhadeva to be the king and installing him on the throne. Then along with his wife, he departed for the Himalayas to worship the Supreme Lord. So that, of course, is the normal system of the kings according to Vedic principles. He takes Vanaprastha when his qualified sons are on the throne, and then he goes to the forest and worships the Lord. And that we'll see not only in the case of King Navi, but others also. It was not a surprising thing to do for the king. But what is particularly mentioned here is that he worshipped the Lord and he attained the Lord. So in other words, he was a great devotee of the Lord, because in that very lifetime he went to the spiritual world. So the only way one can get to the spiritual world is to develop one's devotion until it is perfect, that is, to prema. So therefore, ultimately, King Navi was also a great devotee of the Lord. Even though when he worshipped the Lord, he was worshipping him to get a son like the Lord, which looks material, we can understand by the end of his life that he had attained perfection of prema. So therefore, his status was always as a great devotee of the Lord, in spite of having that material desire for a son. So we cannot criticize the activities of King Navi at all. So on the one hand, he fulfilled his duties as the king, and then he retired and put Rishabhadeva on the throne, and then very enthusiastically he worshipped the Supreme Lord. It says, of course, here by skillful austerity, tapasa, not only skillful, it was also joyfully done, prasanna, mitunena. So he was very eager to engage in worshipping the Lord. Now, of course, it says tapasa here, which generally means austerities, but we also understand that it's not simply austerity that will produce bhakti. Definitely, the devotee has to control the senses. But the main activity which will give attainment of the Lord is worshipping the Lord in various ways, like hearing, chanting, remembering, etc. So austerities is always secondary to that. On the other hand, we can say that bhakti is one sort of austerity or tapas in one sense. But it is the best austerity. And just as we can say bhakti is also a punya, but it's the best punya, because it gives the best results. It certainly gives good results in the material world. Whatever you can get from any other punya, you can get from bhakti, but you get much more than that. So it is the best punya. So bhakti is also the best tapasya, or the best vairagya. Why? Because by performing bhakti, one very spontaneously develops complete detachment from everything in the material world and complete attachment to the Lord. So by becoming attached to the Lord, a person becomes naturally detached from everything. So this is a what's called natural detachment, a natural renunciation in the performance of bhakti itself. So as Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita chapter 9, that the process of bhakti is happily performed or joyfully performed. So here it says prasanna nipunena tapasa, with austerity which was very skillful and done joyfully. So this is generally a contradiction, because tapas comes from tap, and tap means heat, and heat means pain. So tapasa, generally austerity, means it's painful. But here it is said prasanna, it is very joyful. So how can we make something which is painful joyful? Very difficult. So therefore we can also take tapas as not the real tapas of the yogis or the gyanis or whatever, but the tapas of bhakti. That is, that through bhakti a person can attain real detachment from the material world. The method is a little different from the tapas of the yogi or gyani, etc. And of course we see that Rupa Goswami says that in the beginning vairagya and all this austerity may be a little favorable for bhakti, but it can never replace bhakti, and it never causes bhakti, and it's never an anga of bhakti. So therefore Maharaj Nabi actually worshipped the Lord with great devotion and great joy, and that is what qualified him for the spiritual world. So it says that after some time worshipping Vasudeva, Bhagavan, in the form of Narayana, then he attained the spiritual world. The worship was his main part, and whatever tapas was a natural result of his bhakti. So Narayan, of course, are also incarnations of the Lord, avatars, who appeared also in Swayambhuva Manvantara, in the same Manvantara as Rishabhadev. We know, of course, that Arjuna and Krishna are also Narayan. Sometimes it is said that the expansions of Narayana are Krishna and Arjuna. So some people claim that. However, actually it's the opposite. The Narayana are the expansions of Krishna and Arjuna. The opposite. So this is how we understand it. So Narayana are expansions from Krishna and Arjuna. The amsas. What do they do? Of course, they also teach detachment from the material world. They are dressed like brahmacharis and renunciates, and they teach renunciation in the material world, detachment from all material things. So it was quite suitable that Nabi worshipped this form, because he had spent most of his life as the king, surrounded by wealth and enjoyment, etc. So it is natural that in order to become detached from everything, he would worship a particular form of the Lord with that potency to also detach him from everything in the material world, so he could advance in the process of devotion. So the result of his worship was that he got success. So it says, Mahimanam Avapa, he attained greatness or glory. So in the purport here, Prabhupada explains the various acharyas meaning to that word Mahimanam. So it can mean Jivan Mukta, for instance. So after attaining perfection in bhakti, then he attained this position of Jivan Mukta, which means literally completely detached from everything in the material world but still living in the world, which is different from a person who gives up his body and is liberated. And so in other words, he attained a similar position, but he still had a body in the material world. That, of course, is nothing very great for the devotee of the Lord, because the devotee does not want mukti as such. In fact, mukti itself is unfavorable for bhakti. So why does a devotee want mukti at all? So no, he does not want mukti. But when he attains the position of prema, automatically mukti is included in that. So when we say that the devotee is a jivan mukta, it doesn't mean he merges into Brahman. It means that he has attained prema, and therefore he is beyond Brahman. So he's liberated, but he's beyond the position of Brahman. So that is a greater type of liberation than simply getting out of the material world and entering into Brahman. So we would never expect that a devotee of the Lord who worships the Lord would enter ultimately in Brahman. So that is why we say he entered into the spiritual world. So the Mahimanam does not simply mean mukti, but rather it means he went to the spiritual world. And what does he get there? He gets a spiritual body, he is free from birth and death, he is free from hunger, he is free from thirst, old age, he's free from lamentation, for all these things are no longer there in the spiritual world. He is free from all fear. He is satya sankalpa and satya kama. Satya kama means completely satisfied. He has no desire, as people in the material world have desires to get things. And he does not have that type of desire. And satya sankalpa, anything he desires is automatically achieved. So in other words, he's completely satisfied in that position. So that is what the Mahimana means. He has attained eternal service in the spiritual world with the Supreme Lord. Consequent to that, he has a spiritual body, etc., in the spiritual world. So he gets Salokas, Arsis, and Epi, all these different things along with that, as is favorable to his service in the spiritual world. So, Nabi therefore set a very good example as a king, because though he carried out his duties as a king, he never forgot his devotion to the Lord. And therefore, at the appropriate time, he retired. And he 100% engaged in the process of devotion, and then he became completely successful. And he attained the spiritual world with the spiritual form, except to serve the Lord eternally. So, though he served as the king, he was also a great devotee, and he achieved perfection as a devotee. So that is his final glorification or glory, is that as well as being a king and ruling nicely, having the Supreme Lord as a son, he himself attained the highest perfection.
In the case of Karunmi and Rishabdev, Karunmi was son of war, he just left the soil. Here we find Nabi's king that his son comes out, he said his name, and then he gives him the divorce.
Well, that is the responsibility of a king. He has to do that. Why did he want a son in the first place? Because he wanted to hand over the kingdom to a son who was, you know, capable. So that is natural that he should carry out his duties. And we'll see that's the case of all the other kings, like Prithu, he reigned for so many years, or Dhruva. Even though he wasn't interested in the kingdom, he reigned for about 40,000 years or whatever. So long period of time he ruled over and did it as a matter of duty, because they were the kings, and that was the duty assigned to them as descendants of the Swayambhu Manu.
Chanting Hare Krishna.
Radha. Radha and Krishna. Hare is a address to Radha, and of course Krishna is addressed to Krishna. Rama is addressed to Krishna. So the Hare Krishna mantra is calling out to Radha and Krishna, and their names are non-different from the person. So therefore we have Radha and Krishna in the Maha Mantra. Well, when we chant Rama, we're not indicating Rama, Ramchandra. Rama also means one who gives pleasure, though it can indicate Krishna also. One who gives pleasure, or one who enjoys also. Therefore, Rama also indicates Krishna, who gives pleasure to everyone, or who also enjoys with his devotees. So Rama also means Krishna. What's that? That's so later in the story. Coming out in the next chapter. Rishabhadeva and his teachings. He also renounced the kingdom, just like his father. And he went off, and because his avatar, his particular activity was to show complete detachment from everything. Yeah, that's kind of the ideal we see the many of them did. In the case of Rishabhadeva, he didn't. Huh? Yeah, they take him as one of the founders of their beliefs. But as I mentioned before, this Rishabhadeva appears in beginning of the day of Brahma, the first Manvantara reign, which is Swayambhu Manvantara. We are now in the seventh cycle, which is millions and millions and millions and millions of years later. Yeah, because it's the name of Krishna and the name of Radha. So they're the names of Krishna and Radha are non-different from themselves. So if we worship Krishna in this way, then we can realize Radha and Krishna. If we realize them, then we end up in the spiritual world.
Various symptoms of jiva mukta in the spiritual world.
What's that?
Jiva mukta.
No, jiva mukta in the material world has a material body still. When he goes to the spiritual world, he has to give that up and he gets spiritual.
Maharaj, you said that after one becomes jiva mukta, and then
he
becomes prema.
Well, it's simultaneous. If he gets prema, he's automatically a jiva mukta.
Can you explain about jiva mukta? How can we become a jiva mukta?
Well, if you get prema, so you follow the process of bhakti and you go through nishtha, ruchi, sakti, bhava, and you get prema, and automatically you're a jiva mukta. That's our process. The process for the jnani and the yogi is different. They practice jnana or yoga, and then become completely detached. And then, when they're completely detached from the material world, they're almost in Brahman, and they're called jiva mukta.
In the beginning,
Yeah, so for the devotee, we perform bhakti. And then we're called jiva mukta when none of the engagement of the senses is used for material enjoyment. Yeah, in the highest sense. Now, of course, in yoga, a different definition is given. That is realization of Atma alone, not the Supreme Lord. So it's different. For the devotee, that samadhi is realization of the Lord. No, Brahman. If they get devotion, yes, and they perfect devotion, then they go there.
Even the queens were able to
view of the kingdom of God, the king was able to announce to you the Himalayas and all this?
Well, yeah, that was the tradition, at least, that the Vanaprastha goes with his, the husband goes with, along with his wife. So generally we see the king goes with the queen. In the case of Bharat, we don't see that. We don't have a mention of his wife. I don't know what happened to his wife, but you know, we don't hear about her. But in these cases, we do see the husband and wife go together, Prithu and his wife go, or whatever. So it's quite common that they go together, because that was the tradition in the Vanaprastha. It doesn't mention, but I would assume so.
The other process of yogi, need not completely the other process, they need not get the bhakti devotion, or definitely they get the devotion.
What's that?
The other processes, the yogis, if they are following,
hmm.
So Kapayoga, Yamanama, like that, they will get definitely the bhakti, or
no.
It's not necessary.
No, no. Unless they actually get mercy of devotees, they will not progress to bhakti. It's not an automatic progression. They have to actually get mercy of devotees, then they can progress to bhakti.
No, devotees may not get bhakti if they don't follow the
bhakti. Well, of course. Yeah. So that is why the proper knowledge and association, etc., is always necessary.
Garantana Sri Srimad Bhagavatam ki, 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 Srimad Bh